Hey, welcome back to the Rhetoric Warriors podcast. More rhetoricians than you've heard all day long, I promise, on this podcast. Rhetoric Warriors are people who are out there that are we're teaching people how to, cause things with words, how to decause things, how to block other causes. Use words. They're interesting technology. I'm Dr. Dan, rhetoric, PhD, comedy writer, rhetorician, comedian. I started Rhetoric Warriors because I got tired of teaching 18-year-olds who didn't want to hear about rhetoric. Now I'm teaching adults who don't want to hear about rhetoric, but should. It's useful stuff. I talk to comedians on the podcast. I convert conservatives. I do what I call slow conversions on the podcast. And I bring on persuasion professionals. I also bring on rhetoricians. And today we got a new feature. I like little channel features. You can go find these on playlist on my YouTube. This is called Persuade Me, or maybe it's going to be called Persuading Dan. I'm not sure, but I end up being the expert on all these things. And that doesn't seem fair all the time. It seems like other people should be able to show their wares, show their skills. So I'm going to let people persuade me, and I'm going to work on the other side of this. I'm not going to be contentious. I'm not here to just be a contrarian. I'm open to persuasion, but I will also put them through their paces a little bit so we can learn what it's all about. And we're going to launch with a favorite person of mine. He was episode number 4 on Rhetoric Warriors podcast. That was 68 episodes ago, bro.
I've seen it. Yeah.
You're in the early stages. His look has evolved, as I was telling him. His beard has shrunk. His hair has grown. But always cool, always fun. And today, Kirk Miller is going to convince me and others that it's worthwhile to move to Kentucky. I used to live in Kentucky. He's going to try to convince me to move back. He's now the spokesperson for the state of Kentucky. Right, Kirk?
I should be supposed to. And by the way, Dan, it's great to be back with you in this format like this, where, you know, you're down in Austin, you know, and I'm up here.
Yes, you are.
You know, and all I have to do is look at your head. I don't have to see that, you know, body you've curated with nothing but nuts and eggs and what else to eat. Wait, Bart.
You're
Yule Gibbons of the 2020s.
Fool so Gibbons. People, nobody knows who Yule Gibbons is anymore. Was that like 70s? Was that 70s?
Yeah, 70s. He was, yeah, he hawked Grape Nuts.
Which is a weird name.
Like, he was on Grape Nuts commercials.
Nuts? These are nuts and grapes?
It's wheat is what it is. I mean, you know, I think so.
It is. Why do they call them grape? They don't taste like grapes.
Marketing, man. Marketing. It was back before a lot of the rules came in about truth.
Well, tell me, for the people who don't know Kirk Miller, just tell them a little bit of your Kentucky background. Like, what's your...
Well, here I am. I'm here in Louisville, Kentucky, and it's very interesting because I was adding it up the other day. What is today? This is about... You know what? We are sitting right on top of the anniversary day of me having lived in Louisville as long as I have lived anywhere else in my life, because I was born here in 1957. We moved away 2 weeks after that. And then we came back in 1989. I came back in 1989, and I've been here ever since. So most of that first 32-year period was spent in Kentucky, but some of it was spent in Georgia. That's it, Georgia. Well, New Orleans, we were down there.
Is that your first offer, like your first positive of Kentucky, that if you move here, you'll teach people how to say Louisville?
Oh, you know, that's, you know, here I've grown to, I have a different attitude about that now. You know, I used to get pissed when people wouldn't say it right. You know, it's just Louisville, you know, is how we say it. And then, you know, someone would say Louisville or Louisville, and I'm like, no, it's Louisville, you know, and there's a big, I don't give a shit. Say it however you want to say it. I know what you're talking about. There's no other, is there another Louisville that freaking matters in the country? I don't care. Say that. It's just like people would get, still today, people, now how do you say it? Appalachia or Appalachia?
Yeah, I always said Appalachia. But
that's what it's supposed to be said. That's the way it's supposed to be said, according to the Appalachians. And so you remember by Appalachian color, whatever, however you want to do it. Now, see, there's no, I don't give a shit. Say it however you want to say. I know there's only one of those in the country.
So, but that is one of the first things, like Kentucky or Louisville is basically famous for actually being Louisville. Like that's one of the ways it markets itself.
Yes, I have the shirt, the t-shirt back in my closet, you know, as different pronunciations of Louisville, Louisville, and all these stupid little things. And I would wear it through airports after I got it. People, oh, that's so funny. And then I realized that's just, you know, ridiculous. Let's, you know, there's more important things.
All right, you've been in Louisville for a long time and you were in Richmond.
Richmond, Kentucky for a long time. Yeah. So I've really been in every, you know, when you, how about if we can talk about some things as I ask you some questions. When you lived here, How much of Kentucky did you see? Did you get into the mountains much? Paintsville, Pikeville, Prestonsburg, those kind of areas up in the top of the mountains, as far eastern as you could get. Did you spend?
Well, I lived there from 0 to 17. So
I understand. Louisville, right.
South end of Louisville, which is not the good end of Louisville.
Right.
It wasn't the poverty end, but it was definitely the working class and on the edges of Redneck Fairdale and Valley Village and stuff like that. So it wasn't quite over into rural, but we had, you know, when we moved into our house when I was 10, we moved and there were chicken coops and outhouses on the property that we had to deal with, clean up. So well, I was on the edge.
There's chicken coops up here behind $600,000 houses.
Yeah, but this was not a $600,000 house chicken coop.
Yeah, I understand. Right.
And so I traveled Kentucky a lot because I did comedy in Kentucky for quite a while, for a few years.
Okay. So there's
but
some
the mountains,
there.
Like the actual, like in the hollers.
Uh-huh.
Nope. You not very much.
Okay. All right. Drove through them. Okay. But you haven't been on the ground, met people and spent time in their houses and all that kind of stuff. Okay.
No, sir.
And how about, you know, Western Kentucky, you've been down to you know, Lake Barkley and Cumberland Lake. Well, I mean, the land between the lakes. You've been down there to that area?
I have. My grandfather was from Indiana, New Albany, and he took me fishing down there a few times. And I've been I've been to Cumberland, Barkley, Barron.
Okay.
All that area. Yeah. And my family's originally from Henderson, so they were tobacco growers in Henderson until my grandfather moved us into Louisville.
Yeah.
But I never went back there. I don't know any of that side of my family at all.
Yeah. The rural people down there. Well, yeah, those tobacco growers, they were good people back in the 60s. I remember they'd come to the rural church that my dad preached at, and that's when people discovered that tobacco was bad for you. The debate was going on. They're still, you know, of course, there wasn't a tobacco farmer that thought it was bad. And then they started going, well, we just grow it for medicinal purposes. You know, that's what they would say in church. Somehow there was some medicine they were making from this burley, you know. Anyway, so, well, you know, I was asking that just to, you know, see how much of the state you've been in, because I've been in every freaking little corner of this place. And I was lucky enough to have a job with a real estate company that I was just in a car on the ground for about 2.5 years, just driving almost every county of the state. Because we had all these Century 21 real estate offices dotted all around. That was back in the heyday in the 90s, and they were everywhere. But that allowed me to expand my little reach of knowing Kentucky even more. But I grew up in, you know, I spent 18 years in Richmond, Kentucky, which is right on the edge of, you know, the mountains.
Right.
Of Appalachia. Up on the on the edge of the bluegrass plateau, because when you hear about the bluegrass, Kentucky bluegrass, that's not the whole state. That's just an area that really doesn't even reach Louisville. I mean, technically Louisville's not in the bluegrass, you know.
Yeah, Lexington is about the reach, isn't it?
Yeah, that's correct. That's about where it kind of stops when it hits the river there. So that's where I grew up. So I spent tons of time in the mountains. I knew a lot of mountain people that would come. We had my father that taught at EKU. We just had tons of students that would come out of the mountains that would be like the first in their generation to go to college, you know, And so that was an interesting cultural experience to have, to go back in the hollers and see all those folks. And
so is that your first like real pitch, like Kentucky's mountains and that mountain culture is something different than everywhere else?
I could tie it to something. You know, I was also thinking another reason, we also have to look at reasons for you to leave Texas.
Now we'll get to Texas later. Like I just,
well, there's a lot of reasons to leave Texas, and I can out of this, just like, you know, people think they're illiterate in the mountains in Kentucky. Well, you still have a law in Texas that outlaws the owning of a set of Encyclopedia Britannicas. Look it up. And it's because it's got a recipe for beer in it, and they don't want you to have that. It's true. So just look it up. So there's a completely
anything you want to say bad about Texas, I'll believe it.
Yeah. Well, that'd be easy to do. Anyway, a lot of the similar things are here too. So now, you know, so are you an outdoor, you know, here, I was thinking about this. You're not as much an outdoorsman as you are, you know, a gym person.
Yeah. I'm not an outdoor guy at all.
You're not at all.
I could care less.
Yeah. Okay. Well, so I can't, that makes it a little tough. So that puts you in just a couple of areas.
One of your big pitches then is the naturalness of Kentucky. Like,
well, if you're into it, you know, or you can experience it from an urban setting like I do most days.
Yeah, you don't go natural. You're not out there.
Well, I do a lot. I mean, I fishing. Did before I got sick. No, I go camping before I got sick. You know, I would a lot, but I haven't since then. But I have a kayak.
Where have you been camping that you would recommend in Kentucky?
God, Red River Gorge. There was a couple of summers when I was a boy, I spent more nights in Red River Gorge camping than I did back in my house. I mean, we were just there. Now it's just gorgeous. We have a wonderful state park system. Look it up. I mean, you know, you got Mammoth Cave, you know, which everybody's heard of, which actually is the first federal park east of the Mississippi, I think. Isn't that the case? And the Mammoth Cave is an amazing. Have you ever been down to Mammoth Cave, Dan?
Oh, many times.
Yeah.
My school went there, I think, every year. And last time I went, I heckled the park ranger during his his rant about eco, you know, pollution and everything. I started, he asked, so there are these blind fish down here. What do you think they eat? And I'm like, park rangers? He was not used to being heckled.
13? You were 13? Is that what you're?
No, this was, I think I went as an adult after I was a comic.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, yeah, I took my son's scout troop. We went down there and went on a freaking 6-hour hike.
That's the thing about a cave, man. Once you're in a cave, you're in a cave.
You're in a cave. And that was the biggest one there is. And what's so weird is that would have been back in the, you know, 90s, early 2000s. And they've discovered miles and miles more of that cave since then. They just keep finding it. It keeps going up in Indiana. So anyway, outdoor stuff is, you know, wonderful here. But, you know, but you're right. The last couple of years for me has been an urban environment. I'm lucky to live here in Louisville, which I think is one of the best places. You know, not any state. A lot of states don't have any place worth a shit to live in at all. I've visited all those. But, you know, Kentucky's got, you know, depends on what your mood is, you know. Louisville's just got a really cool vibe. It's just kind of where I want to be. You know, it's just got music.
Well, explain that to people like who haven't been to Louisville, because Louisville is the East End, the West End, and the South End.
Well, yeah. I think it's divided this way. I think you have, you've got the West End. That's right, 9th Street and over, which is where we keep all our murders, and then. Then you have downtown and up here where I live, which is the Highlands, out to the Watterson, which is like downtown in the early suburbs, you know, which I'm in an early suburb out here. And then you have the developed East End where all the rich white people live. So really you divide that, and then you have the South. So it's four. To me, it's four.
Okay. That makes more sense.
Yeah. It's four distinct things going on, you know, because, you know, you go out in the East End now and you talk to people, even I go to the real estate offices out there and you talk about the Highlands, they go, that's where all the Black Lives Matter protests were. And, you know, Mitch McConnell, Turtle Crossing is literally less than a half mile from that way, from where I'm standing right now. Mitch McConnell lives.
Is that where he lives?
Yeah, that's what we call it, Turtle Crossing. There's somebody always put people put signs up there all the time, Turtle Crossing. Yeah, Yeah, it's just literally less than a half mile over the hill from where I.
But you're in an enclave of Louisville. You're not representative of Louisville.
Where I'm representative of this community.
You are. Yeah, I give you that. The Highlands.
Of this whole section I described downtown and up through, you know, this section of the town. But, you know, and then south is, like you said, white, but more conservative, more, you know, Trump supporters are going to be in the south.
What's more redneck?
Southeast are where the Trump supporters are. And
right. That's where I grew up.
And people working for social justice are the ones where all the protests are. So, you know, it's easy to identify, you know, and easy. Yeah. No, but Louisville, Louisville is a very neat town. There's a quote, Jim James. I don't know if people know my Morning Jacket group from here, which has had some fame, and I can't get his quote exactly. I shouldn't even brought it up because I'm going to remember the quote. But he talks about how the vibe of New York of Louisville is not the South exactly, but it's got that some of that Southern vibe to it, but it's got. It's just got a weird eclectic thing going on in our music. Back then, you know, it used to be primarily the music and theater scene.
Right.
But now it's expanded to music, I mean, to food and all kinds of other stuff. And so whatever you want, the culture is surprising. We have people every year come here for the Derby, or we used to when the Derby was big. It's kind of fading. I think it may. I don't know. We'll see what the future is. But, you know, you have people from California and New York come down here for the Derby, and they go, holy cow, and they stay for a week, and they wind up moving down here. You know, it happens with pretty good frequency because they didn't realize there's culture anywhere outside of New York, you know.
But that's, again, unrepresentative of Louisville. Like, it's cool 1 week a year during the Derby.
Well, no, but okay, the rest of the year, however, right. But you've got Actors Theater sitting down there, which sends more off-Broadway scripts and developed plays to Broadway than any other off-Broadway, you know, community theater place. We have, you know, our ballet is spectacular. Our you know, theater sports is off the chain and growing right now. You know, soccer, I don't know if you're aware, is getting pretty big in the country right now. It's one of the fastest growing.
Is that the game they play with their feet?
Yeah, they fall down. Yeah, it's great.
How do you turn something into a game just by restricting what body part you can use?
It makes for some really funny looking contortions. And the, you know, the freeze frames of when the ball's hitting them in the face and all that. It's wonderful. I love it.
My favorite part of soccer is going, oh my God, look, he's hurt. Oh no, he's not. Nobody ever gets hurt in soccer.
No, they don't get hurt. They just fall. Yeah, they fall. And then I liked when back there a long time ago, remember when it'd always be a streaker. Somebody goes, you know, of course, when streaking was kind of a thing, I remember Europeans are going, well, yeah, we've been doing that for years, you know, because they something that would run across, you know, streaks. No, I've gotten into soccer lately because we have a very successful second level league, you know, soccer.
You want to hear a funny streaker story before we move on?
Sure, absolutely. I got all kinds of streaker stories.
Streaker, you know, story plus Kentucky Derby story. They come together. So my grandparents lived right across from the grandstand, like the entrance to the grandstand. My grandparents, their house was the last house before you got into the actual Churchill Downs.
I know that neighborhood. They're not around that neighborhood. I got friends live down there right now.
Cool little neighborhood. I always liked that neighborhood. Yeah. But during the 70s, it was during the streaker era, and a guy came, pounded on our front door, and my grandfather opened the door, and it was a naked dude. And he's like, I'm a streaker, man. I'm going to streak through your house. And my grandfather's not here. You ain't. Just shut the door in his face.
It's the door. Yeah. Well, you know, I bet he told stories about that for a few years after that. Or maybe he didn't.
Now, I lived on Southern Parkway for a couple of years, right close to the downs and to, you know,
it's beautiful. That's a beautiful street. Yeah. That's a beautiful road there. It wasn't the part where it's got the double plain on the side. I mean, it's gorgeous and tree lined and all that. You're in that, you know, extension of Old Louisville, really, is how I think about it, because that's
right.
You know, was the southern suburb that grew out of that it was, you know, when I say Old Louisville, that's I forget what the ranking is, but it's like one of the second or third largest collection of existing of Victorian homes that are still existing.
Yeah, it's cool. I'll give you, you've scored a point on architecture with Kentucky. And you scored a point on the Highlands, which is essentially the Austin of Louisville.
It kind of is. Yes, it is. It's a weird... You know, think about the vortex. It's kind of like the Bermuda Triangle a little bit, you know. You've got, you know, Mitch right over here. You've got Hunter S. Thompson's childhood home is in this neighborhood, just about 2 miles over. And then Muhammad Ali is buried about the same distance down here with, you know, Colonel Sanders and, you know, all those other Kentuckians. And yeah, and it's, you know, it's just, it's a, you know, I step out my door and, you know, there's, you know, you can sit down for a 200 plate a person dinner restaurant down the street or grab a, you know, dollar PBR in a bar two doors up from it. You know, we have Rolls Royce bringing people down for dinner, you know, and, you know, and of course they're driving past some homeless people, perhaps, you know, standing around, that kind of stuff.
Well, so I definitely, okay. So you win on the Highlands. That's a selling point.
Okay.
So let's get back to some of the things that would concern me. I need a little more persuasion on.
Okay. Well, Louisville is fun. Louisville is funny, by the way. This is another part of the culture that we need to, that may be a definite attraction to you.
The comedy scene.
The comedy scene. Correct. And as I understand, you attempt to be in that at different times. And so
I can't seem to get out every time I try to.
We might could find your break here. No, it has not abated. I'll say that. It has not abated. It has, you know, you got, I was just looking at Jacob Williams, who's a boy from here. And, you know, he's on Wild and Out. You ever watch that show? Uh-huh. He's been on for damn 8 seasons. He's filming a new, he was just been on Facebook. He's filming a new season, you know, now. So he's a little, these are spinoffs since I've been goofing
around. Wild and Out. Is that a gay show?
It's a rap battle or a show. It's okay. Not a rap battle, just a kind of, you know, I see how cool I am. I don't know. You know, I've been listening to a lot of rap music lately, Dan. Do you know that?
I did not.
Yeah. Mainly at intersections. But I hear it.
Good one. Good one.
Hey, I'm here at Catskills all week. Come on. Hey.
All right, anyway. So the comedy scene.
You could pick off, you know, there's about 30 new guys that are and women that are trying to get into comedy every month coming out of all these neighborhoods you're talking about, you know. And even further. And Dan, they need help.
They do. I've
noticed. You're the one that can help them. Dan, you could help them. Yeah, I tell you, you could help them.
I'm out of that business now. I'm not in the helping comedians business anymore.
Okay, well, then I lost on that one. All right, let's see this.
You didn't lose on that. It does have a vibrant scene.
Okay. You know. Oh, yes, the comedy scene. Yeah, and there's more that I think could be done. I mean, you know, there's a lot of, you know, there's some video work that some people are starting to do, and there's some production. You know, that. I keep seeing news anchors here that live here, like on MSNBC, some of these, you know, the lower level, consultants they'll get on, you know, talking about some political issue to come on, and they'll have a pick. So they're around here somewhere. So if you're interested in politics, that might help. But no, the
celebrities that are
there are more. There's a new good comedy room just opened up. I mean, I don't know. Let me talk about the rooms for just a minute. Of course, okay. You know, the Comedy Caravan.
Yep.
Which was started, the thing is actually an influential room in the whole comedy scene going back to the 70s. 78, I think, is when the germination of the first iteration of Comedy Caravan opened in the
wasn't it called something else? Like,
yes, it was, I mean, it was a lady's name. I forget what it was.
Yeah, now. I can't remember.
It was in St. Matthew's Mall also is where it was. And then I think... then what's his name took it over.
Yeah. Sobel became the Funny Farm.
Tom Sobel took it over and he's the one that really nurtured it and flowered it and actually had all, you know, Roseanne coming through there and a lot of big old comics, you know, have all come through there. And it was one of those comedy clubs that just, you know, went nuts in success during that heyday of those years of the 80s. I guess, in the early 90s.
I was there in 87. So I started there in 87.
Okay. And so that was when there was lines out the door on Wednesdays for open mics, you know, that kind of stuff. And so, but anyway, so that's still there. And thank goodness, and has been open continuously, even through different owners. That's all I'll say. And the one currently now is doing a great job. So anyway, that's a wonderful stable room, fully open now. Shows are just going, everything's going good. And we got the Bardstown, which is just right down two blocks from me, which does regular comedy shows as well. Now we have the Planet of the Tapes, which is a new wonderful venue that's opened up that does doing regular comedy shows. I'm going to be down there Monday night.
Why is it called Planet of the Tapes?
It's a great place. You can actually go rent DVDs and stuff.
Oh, okay. So they have a room attached.
Yes.
To their
yes. Family. Yes. And they also have a movie bingo, and they watch movies together, all that kind of stuff. So yeah. So you've got that, and you've got, you know, different people promoting comedy shows all over town all the time. So anyway, good Lord, hadn't slowed down. So you got that.
So there's some energy. I got that. But is there any talent?
Yes, there is
like real talent.
Well, but what I was saying, well, the real talent leaves, of course, and that's what I was talking about. We have Ronan Hirschberg has left and is doing well.
No, I said talent.
I know you said talent. That's what I'm talking about.
Anyway, Ronan's an interesting guy. He annoys
Ronan is doing well. Ronan is doing well. I catch up with him, and I keep watching his shows on Facebook and stuff, and the boy writes all the time. He's doing funny. He wants it.
I just like his delivery doesn't. I'm like, I can't.
He does it for you. I understand. It's you know what? That's something else. We can talk comedy shop, I guess, another time. But I was thinking.
Yeah, let's talk it some other time. So keep hitting it up. All like right, okay, so
Kentucky. Well,
all moves.
The literacy level is high here in Louisville. My daughter's working on her PhD in astrophysics right now at U of L. Now I know you're crossing the line with educational institutions and having any employment situation with them now. And that's fine.
I taught at the University of Louisville for 3 years.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I've never had a relationship either. You know, not that I ever could, but I'm just saying, I've never been invited to be a professor is all I'm saying, but
hard to believe you would make a great professor.
I know I would. There's no doubt about it, but you know, you have to have like,
all right, I'm going
to
keep you moving here. So we got comedy. Now you mentioned literacy. What about the downsides? Like knock out some of my downsides here. Like the people, people are not, they're not intellectually motivated. And
it's no different than where you live. It's no different than, name any place in this country, because I've been to most of them, and you have a mix of people with varying levels of interest in learning new things. That's the best way I can put it. And it's the most pure way I can put it, without judgment and all that. Do they exclude different things in different places? Yes, that's true. You know, and if you want to talk about that, what are the scotomas to reality in Kentucky? Well, I'm not.
You go to New York, you at least have a literary, you know, tradition and ilk. You've got an intellectual ilk. Yes, where's that in Louisville or Kentucky? Well,
it's all over.
Little pieces of it here and there. It's not like a big strand of it.
You can walk around and find literate people. Hell, I was talking to a guy underneath the bridge downtown in a tent that I was riding my bike by. You know, the shelter's getting filled up, and so they let, you know, the tent thing get, you know, carried away. And anyway, so I was unloading a sofa. I was helping him unload a sofa for this guy in front of his tent, and he was a stockbroker. So there's literate people underneath interstates. It's where you're looking for them, Dan.
Saying is if I go hang out under the viaducts,
you'll probably find smarter people. All right. Where are they in Austin? Well,
we're not comparing Austin. I'm just like,
I know.
I'm thinking I'm just letting you knock out some of my negatives. And I'm not going to them. It's just,
smart,
I grew up in the South End. There was no tradition of intellectualism or reading.
I'm going to help you here. Here's where some intellectualism stems from in Louisville, is our food scene. And there is an interesting, and this might be a connection for you, because there is a ton of interest in healthy and farm-raised and local-sourced and healthy eating and the culinary spirit. Of course, you know, we're not talking about just, you know, thinking about a grilled cheese sandwich all day. We're thinking about, you know, an elevated, it's
yeah. So there's a culinary scene, and there's a
lot of people
sustainable about, food scene.
Yes, it's a lot of people thinking about food a lot and cooking a lot of it and thinking about describing it and connecting it to their life and all that kind of stuff.
So they like the supper clubs where people get together and share, you know, bring stuff.
Any variation you would want, you will find here. Absolutely. And it's so funny too, because there's so many imports, like, you know, there'll be a guy that, you know, be from Puerto Rico, a native, you know, and he opens up a restaurant, you know, and it's here for, you know, 30 years, you know, that kind of stuff. And so, but you have all these different, you know, non-native chefs that have come here attracted by the music scene. I read a stat once by the food scene, I keep saying the music, by the food scene. Okay. I read once where we eat more meals out per capita than any other city in the country. And in both categories, both fine dining and fast food, which if that was true, it's the divide in the economy is what it is. It just,
let's hit this one. Another, you know, seething, open gaping wound of Kentucky, the politics.
Well, yeah, we had that little fart from Northern Kentucky. He was our one Kentucky representative that did not vote to recognize the policeman at the Capitol.
Right.
Up there.
I mean, Rand Paul, Mitch McConnell.
Massey. His name is Massey.
Batman Robin duo ever.
Well, even Rand Paul and Mitch voted for that, but this Massey did not. This guy, was his name, Massey. Little prick. Jesus Christ.
So you got some political problems. Like,
we have a great here's the salvation. And it's a weird thing in Kentucky. We elect Democratic governors on a regular basis.
Yeah, right?
Like we have one now, and it really is our kind of protection against the different choices a lot of our rural people make about what they ignore.
Well, is that what it is? It's the rural population sending the Mitches back in theirs, or something about the Republican Party machinery rigging it all in Kentucky.
It's Louisville and the rest of the state. That's how it votes. You know, I mean, it's now Lexington is going a little bit blue, you know, but the state is firmly Republican. All, you know, we got 5 million people here, I guess 5.5 million. And so, yeah, I mean, that's what it is. But it's like, listen, that's like any other state too. It's diversified a little more as Lexington grows, as Bowling Green grows, as Paducah grows, and there's more people, means more diversity, means more Democrats, because they're see that people aren't so bad. You know, they're they're away from their farm, and they, you know, you've been there all the way through that stuff.
Cause I've documented some of this with you watching the Tea Party sort of move through Kentucky and, you know, that kind of movement and the extremism, which takes roots, you know, much more easily in the rural areas, because there's not a bunch of intellectual defense going on. It's like,
it's not about intellectual. It's about exposure. It's 100% about exposure. It's just like, now we're getting into politics, but I can't help it. Can you blame these people that believe the election was stolen if the only people that they trust have been telling them that for years? I mean, it's as simple as that.
Yeah,
The hitch and the giddy up on that is if Biden lost in 2 years and he did the same thing, I would not believe Biden. But anyway, that's another, you know, that's another dividing line. So,
all right. Yes, so we got we got some
politics.
But you also have good deviance in Kentucky, right? You have, You have good pot, good liquor.
Oh, hell, we're viced up, baby. Everybody agrees on that. That's like, oh, yeah, you got to – bourbon is everywhere. We have, you know, our mayor here, you know, in politics, he's Democrat. He's done, you know, we'll see. He had to navigate us through this, you know, Black Lives Matter stuff. He kind of did halfway. Anyway, it's that whole relationship with the police and the mayor.
Yeah, but I wouldn't want to be in the middle of that when I'm the mayor.
No. Bourbonism is what he likes to talk about. There's you know, distilleries all over the place. That started exploding again about 10 years ago. You know, the Prohibition set us back a little while, and it took a while to get, you know, get things back.
It's like 100 years ago, dude.
Well, it was a while ago, but you know, we're crawling back now. Now liquor, it's an interesting history of liquor. It goes through different phases, and white liquor will be in for a while, and that kind of destroyed the old brown liquor business. There's all kinds of, you know, history and politics, but still that creates an intellectual culture as well, because if you want to, there's not many places you go into museums and you can see history of bourbon making and all that kind of stuff. So it's, you know, it's, that's a fun thing. It's also providing my son quite a good employment, you know, in his life. But so that's fun. So no sport. You never go outside and work out. You just go into the gym and work out.
People will be like, you want to hike? And I'm like, you mean I want to go outside and be less comfortable?
Yeah. You know, first of all, Dan, I'll just tell you that's stupid. But anyway, I understand, you know, what you're saying, but the worst experience in my life ever was at a Hyatt Regency I used to have to stay at up in Morristown, New Jersey. And the only way I could work out was if I went down to their workout room that had those exercise bikes that had the seat the size of a large tractor seat, you know, with padding on it. And the only way to adjust it was just, you know, with the big put, 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 and you'd get that, and it weighed about 180 pounds, that seat, to lift it up. And then you get on it, and the TV was on there, and the graphics were just horrible. You know, I'd rather be outside. The graphics are perfect outside every time.
Good point. I'll give you that one. Another point for her. It's high def. You know, it's the original high def.
And you don't have to wear those stupid pedals that are like pool shoes, you know, that you stick your feet. It's bad, Dan. Get outside. But anyway, there are gyms galore all over this freaking place. There's all kinds of people with your same attitude. Let's go to the Planet Fitness. You don't go to Planet Fitness.
I gotta go to a decent gym.
You mean like one with free weights and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, one that has like you know, if I'm gonna go to the gym every day, like it's gotta have a steam room, it's gotta have
okay. You know. Yeah, they got those here. Hey. Yeah, you got a YMCA down here. It's got all that. We got a luxury YMCA down here.
Yeah. I used to work out at that YMCA.
Maybe a new one since you work there.
Maybe. I got kicked out of the Hirschborn one once. My brother had a membership. My membership had expired, so I kind of snuck in there on an old ID. And about 20 minutes in, this woman, like East Ender, just an East Ender, just a rich East Ender, couldn't just let it go. Yeah. She came back and she's like, I checked on your ID. I called that gym in California and you were no longer a member. And I'm like, well, what are you going to do? Are you going to let me work out or not? It was Christmas. I'm like, it's Christmas. What do you say? Let me do another 30 minutes and get out of here. And she's like, no, you have to leave right now. Barney Fife.
Rules around here. You gotta stand for something, Dan.
I don't like the class distinctions in Louisville.
I don't like them anywhere.
They're strong.
I don't like them anywhere.
They're strong in Louisville. There's a lot of class divide.
They are strong. There's a strong class divide in Louisville. And it bothers me very much. Yes, I don't like it either.
There's also a strong racial divide.
Both of those things, but I have put my hands into the latter more than any in the last year than I have since I was a teenager back in the first. Well, not the first. It's so funny. You talk about the history of racial tensions in your own life and you think back and go, well, I was there during the first one. And you go, no, wait, shit, that wasn't the first. The first one was the boat that came over here in 1700 or 1400.
Yeah,
that's the first one. But anyway, So, yeah. So,
I'm not going to super hold that against Kentucky, Louisville, however, that's everywhere.
However, I was proud of our city last year in a big way. And my temple, so to speak, was after I had gotten over chemo and I was feeling good enough to ride my bicycle and I would ride downtown. And that was during the Breonna Taylor, the height of the protests there, when people were camping out all, you know, downtown, all the stuff. And it was wonderful. And I would come at home and I would see it on TV. I would see my street on TV. And of course there was some dust ups, but I'm telling you, I was there during a couple of them. And it was the story that was being told that it was people from out of town that came in and did it. And it was the police over policing. So it was just as simple as that. You know, I got to see over policing live, you know, which I had been just on TV, but I saw it, you know, downtown. And so I was very proud of Louisville. And, you know, we obviously have a national history since the 40s and 50s, since mass media, since TV, of having, you know, racial tensions have gone on. We were one of the first bus, you know, us in Boston.
Yeah, I was in there. I was a Catholic school kid, so I didn't get bussed, but I was watching all that on TV. I remember the cop who got the fishing lure or whatever in his eyeball. Do you remember that? He lost his eye because somebody hit him with a fishing lure. I'm like, that is so Kentucky.
Yeah.
But he came and talked to our school, you know?
Yeah. And so we have, and I've done a lot of reading about the history of our city, you know, cause I just love
it. Yeah. That's something else. There is a big history in Kentucky and in Louisville that you can really dip into. There's a lot of culture there. There's a lot of past.
Oh, there is. And what I love to do is get on my bicycle and ride around town after I've read about it and be where it happened, you know, and like, I'll go out and speaking of racial history, there's an intersection of 28th and Greenwood out on the West End. And in 68, there was a driving while black incident where the cop pulled a person over for being black. He was actually a dentist or some shit. And 28th and Greenwood out in the West End was a vibrant black community intersection with businesses, nightclubs, restaurants, all, you know, think of Greenwood in, you know, the one that burned, other burned. Anyway, so they had riots and burned the place down over the next couple of days. There's a whole story about it. I've read, gone to the Courier Journal files and all that stuff. And I ride my bike over there today. It's still empty.
Yeah. My grandparents, like I said, lived in New Albany and we lived in the South End. So a lot of times when they drove us back after we'd visit over there, after I'd stay with them for a couple of weeks or whatever, we'd come to the West End. And my grandparents were fifth and sixth grade education, backwoods, Indiana, you know, so I got to hear their views on, you know, all the black culture around them. But I always remember looking at it going, this feels like a different world. I mean, this looks interesting. Like,
it's very interesting. And I'm going to talk about, there's some good things that are happening too. But what I was going to tell you is at that intersection I was talking about, where Muhammad Ali's childhood home on Grand is about two blocks from there. It's just right up around. So you can just ride on up and you can see where he's from. And then there's all this history out, you know, further out to the West End, Shawnee Park and all of that. So it's
you ever,
it's
very you ever thought about you ever thought about founding like Kirk Tours? Because you have steeped yourself in this city.
I had thought about that with bicycle tours. People do it now. There's some people that do it now.
Yeah, but they're not going to do it like you do it.
No, I'd love to. Oh, it'd be funny as hell. I'd love to do that. Absolutely. It'd be a good business. That'd be a good business.
Put a little microphone hanging around your neck.
The technology is there, and I got the desire and the legs and the knowledge, by golly. We just do it. Anyway.
I give you this, man. I think about you in these terms a lot. Like, you have lived your city like nobody does.
Oh, I love it. I am Louisville. It's just inside of me. And I, you know, I've been in all of the states but two. I got to travel everywhere. I could have moved forever ago. You know, the way my job was, all I had to do is be near an airport. You know, so I could have lived, you know, about anywhere. But, you know, it's a choice to stay here for me. And how about all three of my adult children have decided to stay here and they're building their careers right in this neighborhood?
Yeah, I think if maybe I'd have grown up in the Highlands, You know, I had a different, would have had a different experience of Kentucky because basically the South End, there's nothing interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just fights with rednecks essentially was my entire childhood.
Yeah.
And then I played sports a lot because there was nothing else. And there was, again, nobody was doing theater out there.
Man, they do a comedy room down on South End now. They do them on Dixie Highway sometimes. I mean, you know, things change a little bit.
And I'm not saying like I'm clearly importing a lot from my childhood. I could hear Fort Knox. I could hear them practicing the guns from where we lived.
Well, that's still a problem here. I mean, we're you know, horrible gun violence. But most.
I mean, like Fort Knox, like the armament. Oh, like I could hear it from my house.
Yeah, well, Fort Knox is kind of docile now.
How do you get by with calling still having a Dixie Highway? That's a good question.
You know, that's true. Yeah, we took down a few little statues around here, one here near me of a Confederate.
All right, I'll give you another play. We got about 15 minutes left here, so I'll give you another benefit. Like, what do you think about, like, the women in Kentucky? Like,
they're beautiful. Most beautiful women in the world. I'm telling you. Well, you know, I mean, I married one for a while. And this is another episode.
I'm just letting you sell to me. Come on.
Listen, this is another episode. I could tell you, we just go through all the women I've fallen in love with from Kentucky. There's not many outside of Kentucky that I have fallen in love with. Maybe a few, but most of them be in Kentucky. You want to see the most, you want to feel the most beautiful feeling is to sit beside a beautiful mountain lady with red hair and pale skin that's smart, you know, and move back home. There's a perfect woman right there. Or how about somebody who's a woman who's dedicated herself to being a playwright, lives here in Louisville, and's getting stuff going, you know, and she's hot. In your mind, all these ladies are hot. Okay, so
do you think makes the Kentucky women more attractive? Because they're not fully Southern, they're not Midwestern.
There's all kinds of women in Kentucky. You know, I used to have trouble starting conversations with women, but my trans friends have helped me out with that. You know how? I just wait till they turn into a man, then we got all kinds of shit to talk about. You know. Talk about fishing, you know, and sports and all. What makes a Kentucky woman? Listen, that's the individual thing. Women to me are attractive. It's their intellect as much as, you know, what they look like. Okay. But do I have an idea of what's beautiful? Yes. Can I describe what is Kentucky beautiful to you? I'm not sure if I can put that into words.
It's like everybody gets the kind of the Derby vision of that, like women in big hats.
That's not it. The Derby vision's not it. No, that's not what I'm talking about at all. I'm talking about the somebody who would never put on a Derby finery and go to the Derby is who I was thinking about first. You know, but there's plenty of women, persons who associate as women who wear Derby hats, you know, and hood dresses and go. So that's
fine. I can feel that you authentically love the Kentucky woman. So, and there's songs about Kentucky women. Right?
Oh, Kentucky woman is one. So, you know, that's pretty close to. If you did
even that line from that John Cougar Mellencamp song where he's like telling about some girl about Kentucky and he's like, oh, there ain't no girl like that.
See there? That's right. Well, if you actually did Google search it, what's the song about Kentucky woman? And it would come up Kentucky woman. So that's good.
You were Neil close. Diamond.
Neil Diamond. That's right. That's right. No, that yeah, music.
Which I mean, is kind of weird. Neil Diamond from New York? Is he a New York Jew? Like singing about Kentucky woman.
Of course, because Kentucky's cool. Kentucky's got a great
voice. Man, when you've got a voice, you can sing, I swear to God, across every ethnicity, your voice just works.
You don't like bluegrass music, and I'm sorry about that.
I do like bluegrass music. That is not true. I've been a fan of bluegrass for a long time.
I'm sorry. I thought you didn't like, well, hell, son, get home.
I used to go to the bluegrass festival in Louisville all the time.
Let me tell you what. There's more good. Well, again, a reason to live, you know, in Kentucky. And now I'm stretching it out to just about anywhere in Kentucky you want to live. Lexington, Louisville, the mountains, anywhere you're going to find the best bluegrass music in the world, you know, is being played here. Of course, it was invented here, of course, you know, in Western Kentucky.
Is that because that's the only thing they could figure out how to build was a banjo?
No, actually, Bill Monroe got inspired by
the Kentucky Playboys.
Well, Uncle Penn was an actual uncle of his that played the fiddle down there. And he had the first, I think, influence of that sound rhythm to him. And then he wound up with a, you know, playing after that, but mandolin after that. But yeah, so bluegrass is amazing.
Yeah, here. You definitely have that. That's, you don't get that in the same way everywhere.
Well, you're in a pretty good, yeah, I don't talk about Austin too much, but you're, you know, we are actually sister cities
somewhat,
in a lot of ways. So that'd make your transition easy because.
But again, it's just the Highlands. Really, you should start, well, stop saying Louisville now, and say the Highlands.
Well, okay. See, now that's where I think it really has changed more than you'd imagine. When you spend more time here, because I can actually stand to spend time out on the East End now.
Really?
Yes.
That's where my brother lives. He lives out in Prospect, and I'm just
there's some pretty good. Yeah, there's some spectacular restaurants out there. Would I live out there? No, of course not anymore.
So negative. I want you to answer because I know you're close to it. What about the church? What about the religiosity of Kentucky?
Well, we've got that. You know, okay. First of all, overall, it's the church is going down in the nation. I don't know if you've seen the recent numbers. It's pretty dramatic, attendance at the church.
They make a comeback. They've been around for a while.
Okay, but I think it may be representing an appropriate intellectual softening going on. I don't know. We'll see what's happening. But, well, you go where do you want to go to church, Dan? You can go anywhere you want to.
I don't want to see a bunch of churches where I live.
Then listen. They are all up and down my street, and I don't even notice them except that they're beautiful architecture looking.
Yeah, they are. I totally give you that.
And they have beautiful events, and most of the ones in my neighborhood, of course, there's a Buddhist center across the street, you know, from my neighborhood. There's Unitarian church down the street. You know, there's every denomination, and you're right. On this street, they're all, you know, you could call them hyper-liberal congregations, probably all of them. I haven't been into their, you know, so, I mean, they're all going to be spooning the same wacky ideas, you know, but in a, you know, in a more,
I prefer a ladle, just a ladle of
yeah, gravy. Well, yeah, they're
pour that over into open. The gravy bowl.
Yeah, they're open, you know, to some different.
But no, I mean, the conservativeness of that kind of stuff. Like, I grew up Catholic in the South End. It wasn't a hyper conservative Catholicism. But like when you get into the Baptists and all that are still hanging around. Like when you do clubs, when you do your shows and stuff, are you getting some blowback from
wide open? Do whatever you want to do. No, there's none of that. No, there's, I mean, Dan, that's no different anywhere else. Also,
you keep saying that's not a good argument. That false equivalency is not a good argument.
Okay. All right. And especially my other point about there is regional differences in comedy, but no, you don't have to be careful and not upset jokes about the Lord. Here, tell me. This bit would work here. You know, I'm a real religious guy, and I've learned how to have a big influence on children is I use oil-based dye at Easter for the eggs, you know, and then I tell them that if their faith gets strong enough, their fingers will go back to normal, you know, and so, you know, they just sit there trembling, you know, praying at night, you know, looking up at me, looking down at their little stupid
thing. Hey, if you can't mess with kids and religion, come on. What are you doing?
I don't think the resurrection proves the existence proves that Jesus was Christ. I just think it proves that children are stupid. And it's because I get up every Easter and the eggs are in the same fucking place in the refrigerator right by the bacon, you know, and they're out dragging these baskets around, you know. Half the time, you know, trying to find. So you
tell. It seems to me, okay. So to start to tie ribbons around this, it seems to me that Louisville is okay. Like it's not hardcore South. Like you don't get the exoticness of like a
New Orleans. No, it's better than it's better than a compromise. No, it's
it seems like a compromise.
No, it's not. It is so much more than that. We're more like a isolated yet open to all bubble of culture.
I think that's you as a human being with your background and your approach to life, imprinting that and finding that and carving that out of Louisville. I don't think that's the dominant spirit of Louisville.
Well, you know what I say? You know what they say, Dan? When the student is ready, the teacher will appear. No, you are correct. I will give you this. I know some people that love Louisville as much as me, that do podcasts about it, tell stories. I mean, a bunch of young people too, which is very encouraging to me. A bunch, three that I know of that do regular themed, you know, podcasts about Louisville, and they're digging into the history, which means it's going to keep going. And it's a wonderful place, and the cost of living is low. You know, you can get decent housing and everything's a little bit cheaper, you know, here than other major metropolitan areas, but it's got that, it's got everything you need, you know, if you want it, you know, not as much traffic, but horse racing.
Well, horse. I think you've done a great job.
Well,
if somebody's never been to Louisville and they want to, like they heard my kind of resistance, but I own up to the fact that I grew up in a shitty area of Louisville, not a particularly interesting area of Louisville. It wasn't a horrible, it was just, you know, it was what it was.
Right.
But you have done a good job of shearing away my predilections towards anti-Louisville. And there's plenty there if you want to live there and be a person that's engaged. Mm-hmm. That guy, go look up Kirk Miller, and he will help you engage because he's engaged.
Absolutely.
Engaged to Louisville. When are you going to pop the question? When are you going to actually marry Louisville?
Well, I like it. I don't want to mess it up. I don't want to mess the relationship up. It's good just the way it is. You know how it is. Dan, that's we awesome. Would like to have you back. Come on back. No kidding. You would be an addition. You would be another reason that we could argue that Louisville's a good place to come live. Seriously, Dan, because you would be a contribution to the comedy community and to the theater and obviously the greatest part of Louisville to me is the creative community. I mean, that's what I spend most of my time in, with comedians and the theater and music and that kind of stuff. And so you'd fit right in, man.
Well, it's a good pitch, buddy. I appreciate it. You've done a little bit there to persuade Dan. So you've done your job today. Well rhetoricianed. Plus, you got the look. I mean, come on. A guy like that doesn't live in a conservative backwater.
I could, but I don't.
Yeah, you could. That look will actually work in a conservative backwater, too, as long as you're drunk or something. You'd be fine.
Treat everybody nice. You can live anywhere. Yeah, don't matter.
All right, man. Well, if you're in Louisville, go see Kirk Miller. He does shows and stuff.
I'm starting shows back up again, baby. I'm getting them booked. I don't have a lot to talk about. I did one last night. I'm doing one Monday. I think I got another one next Wednesday that I'm going to do. I'm just trying to – I tell you what, I'm constipated with jokes. I sat home for all this time writing all these jokes. Now I'm trying to come out. That's why I'm dumping them on you. But anyway, okay.
All right, man. Well, thanks a lot for doing this. This has been the Rhetoric Warriors podcast. Keep on coming back, and we'll just keep letting people persuade me and see, you know, where I end up.